This episode is brought to you by our Hosting Handbook mini course. Whether you're already hosting guests on Airbnb or you're still trying to soak up as much knowledge as you can, this course is the ultimate cheat sheet.
It can transform your hosting from hobby to business. Get our coveted templates that include the welcome book, turnover handbook, and supply closet spreadsheet, and other great bonuses you don't want to miss.
Our hosting handbook is usually priced at $297, but for a very limited time, you can grab your seat for just $67. Head to www.thanksforvisiting.me/hosting handbook to get all the deets. Now, on to the show.
You're listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. We believe hosting with heart is at the core of every successful short-term rental. With Annette's background in business operation and Sarah's extensive hospitality management and interior design experience, this dynamic duo has welcomed more than 2,000 guests from 25 countries, earning them over $500,000 and garnering them over 650 five-star reviews. Now they're ready to share creative ways for your listing to stand out, to serve your guests, and be profitable. Each episode will have knowledgeable guests who bring value to the short-term rental industry, or Annette and Sarah will share stories about their own experiences so you can implement actionable improvements to your own rentals. Whether you're experienced, new, or nervous to start your own short-term rental, we promise you'll feel right at home. Here are your hosts, Annette and Sarah.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to another great week. I am Sarah Karakayan.
I am Annette Grant, and together we are...
Thanks for visiting. All right, Nettie G, we are going to start this episode like we do every single week and share one of you, our listeners, and all the hard work and dedication you're putting into the short-term rental community. Annette, who used our hashtag on Instagram?
Two amazing ladies, Justine and Mary Ellen. This is a little bit of a remix of what we normally do. We are highlighting at abide.stays today. And the reason they're a little bit different is they actually have their own hosting business. So host multiple properties in the mountains, on the waterfronts. They have a flower farm. They have some properties in the city, but they will help co-host your properties for you. And Justine and Mary Ellen are amazing at what they do. I want you to please follow them on Instagram and then make sure you like all of their pictures because they're phenomenal. But one of the things that we want to do, we want to highlight their business is they actually, every one of their property donates to a charity in their community. So we just love that that's a part of their ethos and their mission is that their property owners donate back. And so we just want to highlight them. We're so thankful that they used our hashtag. If you haven't used our hashtag yet, please do because we want to share you with our listeners and we just want to up-level what it means to be a host. So again, please use the hashtag STRShareSunday and we will highlight you on our show. All right, Sarah. This is so exciting for multiple reasons. One of them being, this is our 100th, I have goosebumps.
Yes.
100th episode.
Ooh. Yes.
Man, if you guys even knew.
The work that goes into this.
The that we still don't have the audio down, but we just press on every single episode. But we are so thankful for all of our listeners that have been around that whole time. But for this episode, yeah, we have an extra special guest and... if I could do a drum roll, I would. But Sarah, let's introduce them.
Okay. Both Annette and I have like sweaty palms. We're very excited / nervous / ready for this interview. New York Times bestselling author Chip Conley is the boutique hotel entrepreneur who, you guys, helped Airbnb's founders turn their fast-growing tech startup into a global hospitality brand. That is right. Chip is the founder of the Modern Elder Academy, where a new roadmap for midlife is offered at a beautiful oceanfront campus in Mexico. Chip, welcome to our show.
It's great to be with you ladies. I am so heard because I love what the work that you're doing. And we have, I guess, some history because you came to one of the Airbnb opens or maybe more than one. I may have seen you there from afar.
Yes. I saw you on stage several times, but I just went to one, but it was at the very beginning of my hosting career. And I was like, man, talk about belong anywhere. It was the in LA and downtown. And we just like, I just immersed myself in the whole entire experience and just was a sponge because I hadn't really hosted that many guests yet. It was like, I just gotten started. I was like, hey, if I'm getting started, I better just go to the Mecca. I better go to the Airbnb open to learn. And I think, you know, our listeners know we had Mike and Michael and Debbie on the show. Their book was a gift at the Airbnb Open.
Yeah,
and
then Senior Nomads, Senior Nomads. 93.
Yeah, so thank you to them. But Chip was on stage multiple times throughout the event. There were so many great speakers and musicians. It was just, it was amazing. I think you actually planned most of it, right? Didn't you, Chip? Was it a big part of your undertaking?
Yeah, that was the fourth one that we had done. And it was it was sort of the crescendo event because we sort of outgrew the event because we had 20,000 people. And after that, Brian said, I'm not sure how we can keep growing this from originally 200 people up to 20,000 people over the course of 4 years. So
that would have been a feat for sure. Well, but I think you guys have done other things. Airbnb has done other things to help us hosts feel like we belong to a greater community, which that's why it continues to be successful. But can you take it back to how you got to be, you know, this hospitality and hotelier expert? Is this what you always hoped to do when you were little? You wanted to be in hotel management. Talk to us about that whole process and your story.
Sure. I grew up in Southern California. I went to college up north at Stanford. And while at Stanford, I got very interested in commercial real estate and did some work in commercial real estate during that time. I then went to business school at Stanford and focused again on real estate, went to work after business school for a real estate developer, but was really bored after about a year or two, partly because I wanted to do something that made me feel like I was making people happy. And at that time in the mid-1980s, boutique hotels were just getting off the ground in the United States. So at the ripe old age of 25, I wrote a business plan. And at age 26, I bought a motel in the Tenderloin of San Francisco and created my first boutique hotel. The name of the company I created was called Joie de Vivre. And for 24 years, I ran a boutique hotel company, making it the second largest in the United States with all 52 of our boutique hotels in California. The company's now a Hyatt brand. And then I sold it during the Great Recession. And it was a couple years later that the three founders, but most specifically Brian Chesky, the CEO of Airbnb, tapped me on the shoulder and said, Chip, we want you to help us democratize hospitality. And I said, well, tell me more. And you know, the rest is history. I spent the next 4 years as the head of global hospitality and strategy, overseeing all of the hosts globally at Airbnb, but also a bunch of other things. But I think the thing I'm most proud of is I was Brian's mentor. And I still am 8 years into it, 4 years of full-time, 4 years now as just a strategic advisor. He's come a long way, as has the company, since the time I joined 8 years ago.
And we'll get to this later. Yeah. You're on to some very exciting projects now too. Let's go back to the Phoenix. And was, you started to pull in a crowd of, it was considered more of a rock and roll hotel. I was listening to an interview that you did and you said that great entrepreneurs and great hosts, they meet unrecognized needs. Mm. How can our listeners who, you know, are hosting all over the US, all over the world, and maybe it's just a room or maybe it's an apartment or maybe it's a full-on vacation rental, how can they take that and for their own property, how can they see what an unrecognized need is? Can you talk us through how as hosts Sure. we can do that?
Yeah, I wrote about this in a book I wrote. So I've written five books, and one of them was called Peak, How Great Companies Get Their Mojo from Maslow. And so in that book, I applied Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs as a sort of iconic psychology theory to organizations. And so there's a pyramid that would define the customer experience. And the base of the pyramid is meeting their expectations of the customer. The middle is meeting their desires. And at the top, the peak experience for a customer is having their unrecognized needs met. So just that gives some context. So what is an unrecognized need? It is something that a customer wants that they may not even know they want, and they definitely don't know that is available to them. So what is that in the context of STRs? How could that mean? Well, I think one of the things I always want when I'm staying in someone else's home or at, you know, someone's hosting me, is I really want to know what in that area in the neighborhood would be a good fit for me. So an unrecognized need, a desire might be that the host does a great job of creating a neighborhood guide of what to do, where to get the things, et cetera, and might even sit down with you and give you some suggestions. But an unrecognized need is when the host is so savvy about who you are and what you like that they can actually offer to you without you asking the kinds of things that you might want. So for example, if you're a host, now we want to make sure we're not stalkers. We want to make sure that, but you could ask a few basic questions as a host, and you can do it each time. You may even have a little questionnaire if you want to try to, you know, process or automate this, where you send something to them and there's like seven questions, and you find out that the next guest that's coming to visit you loves yoga, is vegetarian, likes to go for a run, and is interested in, I mean, we're living in an era right now where this is sort of less relevant because I was going to say interested in live music, like jazz. You know, today we can't go out and listen to jazz, but let's say that that was the case. So you would actually create a little map that was just customized. You'd have like a template on your computer and you just create a customized map saying, here's some things that I think you're going to enjoy in our area. Here's a vegetarian restaurant. Here's a great little Whole Foods market nearby. Here's where you can listen to live jazz, but it's closed right now. So instead, I've put together a little playlist for you of some of my favorite jazz. And here's a great place to do yoga, et cetera. And then, oh my God, this person is like, I'm staying with my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
What I just described there, once you create the templates, the template of asking the questions, and then the template of just putting it, probably takes about 30 to 45 minutes per guest. Oh. You know what? That's less time than it takes to clean the apartment or after they've left. So that doing that would actually, the beautiful thing about doing that is you create a relationship at the very start. Because what I know about guests is the following. Guests have an invisible report card on their forehead, and they get all wrinkly in their forehead if they look and they, oh, I made a wrong decision. This was a mistake.
Mm.
And the key thing in the first 5 minutes is a guest needs to feel like they made the right decision. And when you can offer something like this, you might even offer it before they arrive, even better, because then they're like, I'm primed, I'm excited. And then they don't look for the lint under the couch.
So true.
They're more forgiving at that point because they're just blown away.
That is such a great idea. It's like, hey, do you like coffee? Are you a coffee drinker? Are you wine or beer? And send them to a brewery or a coffee shop. That, listeners, that is gold. That we could stop the episode right now. Of course we will not, but please take this advice right away. And like Chip's saying, just send that little bit of a questionnaire, get to know them and help them enjoy their stay. And then, you know, if you do get that to them ahead of time, I think that's genius. Actually give that to them before they even arrive. So they're not looking at every single detail. They're already just excited to drop their bags and maybe head out on the suggestions that you gave.
And I'm sure in your experience, Chip, that also creates this, well, I gotta stay with Sarah and Annette again next time I'm in town or send my friends and family there. I mean, it creates this like a relationship that goes beyond just the one stay.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, the best, especially for hosts, you know, the best thing you can do, because you don't have much of a marketing budget, the best thing you can do is to create evangelical customers.
Mm.
So my company, Joie de Vivre, grew to a $250 million a year company in terms of revenue. But we spent less than $50,000 a year on advertising. And that's because our customers did all our advertising. They did all of our promotion.
Wow.
And not because we had an organized plan for it. Yes, occasionally we would actually send information for them. They'd share with their friends. But no, it was more that we just created this such a spectacular experience. That it made the difference. And this is really mostly before social media. From the era of social media and Instagram and things like that, you write a handwritten note and leave a great apple or bottle of wine for someone. Someone takes a picture of that and they throw it on their Instagram. And next thing you know, people are saying, or you got a great view. I mean, if you have a great view or if there's something obvious, you know, good for you. But let's say there's not a thing obvious. You're dealing with sort of like a very a unit that isn't all that exciting, a listing that's not, you know, doesn't have the sort of signature kind of things that someone can naturally see. Well, then it takes a little more ingenuity to create something that's an Instagrammable moment. But, you know, social media is a great way to get the word out.
Love that. Here's, I know you've talked about this a couple of different times too, and that specifically kind of going back to, you know, all of the hotels that you had. I think you normally, when you're branding them, we talk a lot about our listeners to make sure that they have a mission and their brand in mind for their property. Again, whether it's an apartment or a vacation home, you talk about, you know, maybe having a magazine that's kind of defines what your property is, and then five adjectives. Can you talk about that theory that you have? It, I think our listeners would really gain a lot from that too.
Sure. We created 52 boutique hotels. Every single one of them had a different name and a different personality, and maybe even a different niche of people it was serving. And so our process for doing that was to create five adjectives. Frankly, start with imagining a magazine that was sort of the ultimate personality of this hotel. And then frankly, realizing that the person who loves this hotel is probably someone who loves that magazine. So let me use an example. There's a hotel called the Hotel Vitale in San Francisco. And it's sort of I called it the post-W pre-Four Seasons hotel. Mm. Someone who had outgrown W, but was not yet ready for maybe a Four Seasons or Ritz-Carlton experience. And so we called these people bourgeois bohemians, bobos. And so that person might like Real Simple magazine meets Dwell. So modern, urbane, fresh, natural, and nurturing. So everything we did in creating that hotel came back to that combination and those five adjectives. So we had a spa in the hotel, which was unusual. We had a yoga studio in the hotel. Very unusual for a financial district hotel to have a yoga studio in the hotel. We had a design that was quite modern and very sort of sleek and very, you know, clean lines. And so in essence, what we tried to do was create a hotel based upon that magazine, or in this case, the combination of two magazines. What we came to find was that the people who fell in love with the hotel were people who would use those five adjectives to describe themselves. Mm-hmm. And so in essence, the hotel was what I call an identity refreshment for our core customer. And in so doing, we also looked at the five senses and how could we stimulate the five senses of the person. So for a modern, urbane, fresh, natural, and nurturing hotel, wouldn't it be interesting if we had aromatherapy and lavender sprigs, you know, coming out of the guest room signage of every guest room? So when you're walking down the hallway, you're smelling lavender. And so I think when you do those kinds of things, and especially when you take it to the level of five senses, someone's coming into your home and you know their arrival time, and there's some music that, you know, this person loves symphony, and there's Vivaldi's Four Seasons or whatever Vivaldi, you know, composed, is playing, and there's just the right smell because there's an aromatherapy candle that you just lit. There is a basket of the kinds of goodies that this particular person wants to eat. There's something to touch. And then, of course, the thing that we all focus on is the view. You know, what's the person seeing? But you can go beyond just the seeing sense. There are four other senses that you could actually stimulate. Now, of course, you're not going to burn a candle if you're across the, you know, on the other side of the US and you're doing all this by remote and no one's there to like make sure that the candle doesn't like fall over and burn the place down.
Right.
But there are things you can do that actually make it a memorable experience immediately. And the memorable experience is a function of what's the personality and soul and the five adjectives of what you're creating.
I know, we're taking notes here.
So good. So next up for you was you sold the hotels and you got a door knock from the founders of Airbnb, and they hired you to be the head of global hospitality and strategy. And you said that when you got there, you found yourself, yes, you were a mentor, but at times you put on the shoes of an intern. And that is still sticking with me since I've learned more about, and that's, I think that the mentor and the intern can serve so many people, especially our listeners. Can you explain what you what you learned and what that meant to you at that time.
So I was 52 years old and had been for 24 years the founder, the CEO of the company I founded. And so the last thing I expected at 52 was to be reporting to someone who was 31. But Brian was very convincing, and I could see how curious he was and how much he needed a mentor. But I also realized I'd be reporting to him. So I first of all had to get used to the idea that I was reporting to someone so much younger than me. Secondly, I had never worked in a tech company before. So here I was, this guy in his early 50s who'd had a successful career, but now I felt like the beginner. And I actually felt like the dumbest person in the room some of the time because they were talking this tech lingo and I was twice the age of the average person there. The average age at Airbnb at that time was 26. So I was like, wow, I am the old guy. I'm grandpa. They called me the modern elder. I'm the modern elder who's as curious as he is wise. But that was it. You know, I had to be curious. I had to not sort of be the classic, okay, boomer, thinking I knew it all. And I instead had to say, listen, there's some things I don't know at all. And I'm going to be curious and ask questions. But at the same time, I had some wisdom to offer. And that wisdom ultimately was a fundamental piece of what made Brian a better leader. And a fundamental piece of how the company could blaze a trail so that we went from being an organization that only really was going after millennials who are on a budget in urban markets to being a mainstream hospitality brand that actually addressed all kinds of guest needs, which in 2020, this last year, was so evident in terms of how short-term rentals and vacation rentals were the favored. They were no longer the alternative accommodations. They were the preferred accommodations as opposed to hotels. And, you know, I think the process of developing host tools that helped hosts be better at what they did, having guest satisfaction go through the roof. So Airbnb's host satisfaction from its guests is higher, significantly higher than the hotel industry. And I think the hotel industry was scratching their head thinking, how the heck are they doing this? But at the end of the day, for me, it was an exercise in psychology. How do we encourage our hosts? How do we both do the carrot and the stick? The carrot was, how do we help hosts become as great as they can be? How do we create a super host program, which was something that I helped to create that actually is fundamentally a motivational tool?
Yes.
How do we have Airbnb open, and how do we do have education? How do we do all kinds of things like that? How do we create communities where people feel a part of something? But then there's this other side. We had to have the stick, which is like, okay, we're only going to be as good as our worst hosts. We better get rid of a lot of our hosts and listings, which was hard to do. But we had to actually go through that process of trying to create a better quality on the platform. Because for our hosts who are doing a great job, that meant that there was more of a recognition that Airbnb doesn't necessarily stand for consistency across the whole platform, but it does stand for dependability. Mm. And there's a difference. Consistency means same thing over and over and over again. It's predictable. It's like Holiday Inn, you know, but it's boring. Dependability means it got what you expected to get. And Airbnb has done, and its hosts have done a pretty good job of delivering on that.
I'm going to go back some steps before you even, you know, decided to take on the challenge to join Airbnb. You know, you were so instrumental in the beginning. Could you see this vision? And, you know, was it a twisting of your arm to really get you to come on board? Like, or were you like, hey, I might stick around for a little while? Or did you really, like, when Brian told you the vision of what, you know, they had for Airbnb, were you like shaken to the core right away? Like, wait, this is going to blaze a trail. Or were you like, I don't really know if this is going to work, but I'm going to come along for the ride. What were some of your initial thoughts about the brand when you first joined?
Well, it's a great question. I don't usually talk in depth about what it was like back in March and April 2013 when I was in this time, starting to spend time there, starting to give speeches to employees, starting to mentor a couple of employees. This is way before I was actually an employee of the organization. I didn't understand it. It's like, I am a hotelier. Like, why the heck would anybody want to stay in anything but a hotel? If you don't have a budget, just get a cheap hotel. But then I started to realize, okay, it's a couple things. Number one is more space, less money. That's usually the case. But there's also the element of wanting to live like a local and mm-hmm. feel connected, but wanting to ultimately belong anywhere. And so I could see it, but I wasn't convinced. So we made a six-month pact, Brian and I did, and I said, okay, I'm going to work for 6 months. You don't have to pay me any cash. Just give me a little bit of stock that actually will vest 6 months from now, which is unusual because stock usually vests for four. It takes 4 years to vest. And I said, let's try it out. Let's also not tell anybody about it, meaning let's not tell the press. Because here I am, like sort of a high-profile CEO of a hotel company coming in there. I wasn't scared. I was just telling friends and all. But I sort of felt like, God, if we tell the press is going to start making this into like, Chip's coming in to become CEO. And I wanted Brian to see, I didn't want to be CEO. I had just started another company, I just started a website dedicated to the world's best festivals. And I was like, I'm focusing on that. I'm going to do this on the side. I'll do 8 hours a week. Brian convinced me 15 hours a week was the right number. So that's how I started. And then about 3 weeks into it, I looked at Brian and I said, this is not 15 hours a week. This is 15 hours a day. And he laughed and he said, caught you. And I realized at that moment, about 3 weeks into it, I had a choice. I could either leave and just say, this is not for me because it needs 70 hours a week. Or I could try to clear my plate such that I had space to be as involved as I needed to be. And so that's what I did. I did the latter. I'm glad I did. And I ended up getting involved in way more than hospitality and strategy, but business development, learning and development internally helped set the business travel department up, meaning, you know, how do we get corporations to sign contracts to send their employees to our place, to Airbnb homes. It was in charge of all landlord partnerships around the world, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I got really involved. I loved it, but it was a burnout. I mean, I did it for 2.5 years at full-time, full throttle, 70 hours. And then I was like, you know what, Brian, as we move toward my 4 years here, the next year and a half, I need to figure out how to like do a great and graceful way to hand off all these things I'm helping to run to other people, because I don't want to be doing this into my 60s. So that's what I did. And Airbnb Open was a part of it. That was Airbnb Open was Brian's idea. He said, let's create a almost like a world's fair, and you know, an experiential conference dedicated to hospitality. Which in the first couple of years it was a conference, but by year three and four, it was a festival. And it was not just sort of people coming into rooms and listening to other people. It was everything. And it was a festival. And interestingly, I started at Airbnb while I was creating a festival website. And here I was helping take what was a corporate conference and turn it into a festival. Yeah, it was a great experience. We had people from 110 countries at our third and our fourth Airbnb Opens coming to, you know, these events.
So when you were mentoring and interning, do you feel like it was even Stevens, like you're doing both on a daily basis? Or did you feel like, you know, you started mentoring more? Or was, I just feel like the learning curve for everyone there kind of had to be like just insane during that time. How much do you feel like were you just like learning just as much as you were giving information and your wisdom?
I mean, when it came to tech, I was absolutely the learner. But I would say I was maybe 75% of the time mentoring and 25% interning. But I had over 100 employees who considered me their mentor over the course of these last 8 years. And including I have a call with someone later this morning who I still help mentor. But what I saw was that I was mutual mentoring. I was actually learning something from them while they were learning something from me. And that's what made it really interesting. If it was just one way, it wouldn't be reciprocal. But it felt quite reciprocal. And in feeling reciprocal, it allowed for us to learn from each other. And I think that's the future of corporate learning and development, is finding mutual mentorship opportunities.
And that's how we all grow, is to learn from each other at all walks of life. That's how we can become mm-hmm. well-rounded. One thing we want to talk with you about, Chip, before we talk about what you're doing right now, and I think where you're at right now, is one of the largest groups on Airbnb. They are female hosts around the age of 60 years old. Our audience are mostly females, and they're anywhere from 45 years and older. And they're finding hosting homes to be like, where was this my whole life? You know, it's their second or third career. And they're coming to our podcast loving that you know, we nerd out about it. And the core of what our podcast is the hospitality aspect, but also how to treat your one room down the hall, you know, from your kids who have left you it to be an empty nest, now a short-term rental, to those like Ned said, who run vacation rentals. So why do you think it is that hosting is reviving people later in life? And it's like this like call to get them back out in the game and to be entrepreneurs in the short-term rental industry. What is it about that?
That's a great question. Well, the data is very conclusive that the demographic of hosts that have the highest guest satisfaction score are women over 60. So, you know, I lead the process of doing the research on that, and it was really fascinating. So I think that let's start by saying maybe for women over 60, it comes naturally. And it doesn't have to be just women over 60. It could be anybody. But let's just say, you know, women in midlife and later are sort of they've spent their life being a helper. Being a guide, you know, cleaning up after people, being a first-class noticer, noticing what people need. Mm-hmm. Men are not as good at this, generally. Again, these are all generalizations.
Sure, yes.
So I think that, you know, hospitality comes naturally for them. Knowing how to create a beautiful space comes naturally. Secondly, there's a sense of like, wow, you know what? You're 45, you're 50, you're 60. It's harder to find money, you know, you may have actually been out of the workplace for 10 or 15 years or 20 years because of kids. And now you're trying to find a way to make money. And, you know, hosting is a way to do that. And it is a way to maybe tap into some natural talents you have that aren't going to be as obvious as, you know, if you were to go into a traditional corporation. It gives you flexibility. One of the things that people like, you know, in midlife and later is to sort of work part-time. And you can choose, you know, as a host, you can sort of choose your own schedule. You can say, hey, I don't work in August. I don't host anybody in August. It's like, for one reason or another, I just don't. I mean, now, if you're a location where summer is where it's all about, then let's talk and I'll be your consultant to say, you should work
in
August.
Figure it out.
Take January off.
Yeah, or take January and February off. You're going to make so much in August.
Exactly. So I think that the idea that you can sort of form fit your career as a host, doing something that's natural, making pretty good money, all of that actually works pretty well. And it gives you a sense of that entrepreneurial pride that a lot of people really want in their life.
Have you noticed in your research of this group, things that you noticed though that they could be more of an intern on? That's what they're good at, welcoming people, creating beautiful spaces. It's a chance for them to be flexible. But what have you noticed that you can give our listeners? Like, but we also notice here's where you can improve. Here's where you can be more of an intern. And so they can continue to be a part of this and not experience the burnout and the frustration that can come along with running your own thing.
They need to go to one of our MEA, which we'll talk about in a moment, Modern Elder Academy classes on everything you always want to know about tech, but were afraid to ask.
Okay.
So sometimes I see older women hosts who feel a little awkward around technology and around Wi-Fi. And of course, my Wi-Fi here in Baja is not perfect, which is funny that I'm suggesting this. but the truth is that, you know, technology is like plumbing. You know, everybody has to have it. And Wi-Fi is that plumbing that a person needs. And so knowing how to make sure that Wi-Fi is accessible and available, and having enough plugs for people, wouldn't it be nice if you had just like, you know, extra earphones, earbuds, what do you call it when you're plugging in your computer so you can actually get it some juice and electricity? Just
extra chargers? Yeah,
just a charger. I mean, just like the kinds of things that people want, you know. So I would just say that's the piece that sometimes I would say older women feel a little bit more awkward around. Mm-hmm. And yet it's something that your guests at any age is looking for.
Right. All right. Well, let's share with our listeners, though, what you're working on now. Because,
sure.
Again, Sarah and I, you know,
We did research before the show, and you actually opened my eyes to a lot of things. Just some quotes from another podcast you're on, but you were talking about there's a lot of unexpected pleasures of aging, and we are all living a lot longer. And you have this whole accumulation part of your life, and then this editing part, and then this part where you still wanted to continue to learn. So, tell us how you're creating a space for this and your new project.
So after I finished my 4 years at Airbnb and was now moved into the strategic advisor role that I've been in for almost 4 years, I started writing a book called Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder, telling my Airbnb experience. And as I was writing that book here in southern Baja, about 1 hour north of Cabo San Lucas in Mexico, I have a beachfront home here. I was running down the beach one day and I had this epiphany where I call it my Baja aha.
That's good.
Aha of like, okay, why is it that we don't have a place where people can learn how to become a modern elder? And a modern elder is like, elder is just a relative term. If you could be 40 and be an elder if you're surrounded by 20-year-olds. So we don't have a place where people in midlife can sort of imagine what's next for them, how to maybe shift their mindset on aging and feel a little bit of a new sense of purpose in what they're doing. And so I decided I'd create the world's first midlife wisdom school and buy land and homes around my home to create the campus. And, you know, and it was about 3 years ago that we opened on a beta basis, trying it out for 6 months to see if there was enough interest in it. Turns out there was. The number one thing people asked for was, do you have an alumni program? How can we connect with a broader community of people like us? And the average age of people coming is 54. But we've had people from 30 to 88. And so for 3 years now, we've had almost 1,000 people come down to Mexico to our place. And I just came back from a trip to the US where we're opening our first US location. I can't tell you or any details yet, but it's a 2,600 acre ranch. And it will be our first MEA regenerative community, oriented toward people who want to regenerate themselves. And, so yes, it's been exciting. We've had a few Airbnb employees here, including Jonathan Mildenhall, former chief marketing officer, Mark Levy, head of HR, and three or four others. So it's sort of like my next calling, the thing I want to do next.
Yeah, wow. But you just can't stay away from the hospitality, can you?
It is hospitality. So it's like taking my hospitality background and then integrating my personal growth fascination. There's something called the Esalen Institute in California, famous personal growth retreat center. I was on the board there for 10 years. So hospitality, personal growth, around as well as a curriculum around how to navigate midlife transitions and feel like the second half of your adult life is better than the first.
Yeah, I'm cheersing to that. Just kind of going along with that, Sarah and I have talked on a lot of episodes that we feel like we're still kind of living in COVID days right now, but we feel like people with this work from anywhere that's happening right now, we feel like that's not only going to continue, but
yes.
Also I've had this vision of when I retire, similar to the senior nomads, of people staying in multiple cities instead of buying that, you know, a second property for, you know, 6 months of the year, whatever. We see them, you know, traveling the world and staying months at a time. Do you see that? Do you foresee that trend happening also?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. So I think the digital nomad went mainstream in COVID. Mm-hmm. The digital nomad existed pre-COVID. And the digital nomad or the senior nomad, you know, it was around, but it was sort of a millennial thing. I mean, you know, that's why Michael and Debbie Campbell are unusual. It was mostly a millennial thing. It was mostly a lot of times tech workers or people who just could work remotely, remote teams, virtual offices, et cetera. But for the average person, it was like, I don't know that that's for me. Well, guess what? If you're not working in the office and if you can be anywhere, more and more people, we're seeing it down here in Mexico, people coming down here and saying, I'm going to go live there for 3 or 6 months. And then I may go on the road to some other places. And so in a world where Wi-Fi is sort of the currency we all need to work with, as long as you can get Wi-Fi and you have the space to do great work and you feel safe in that wherever you're going to go, why not do it on the road? And I think it's a huge benefit to the short-term rental industry because let's face it, as someone who's been in the hospitality industry, hotel industry for 34 years, Airbnb is the extended stay lodging accommodations offering for the world.
Yeah.
What do I mean by that? Well, the hotel industry has extended stay housing or extended stay hotels, but they're terrible. I mean, they're like Extended Stay America or Embassy Suites or Residence Inn or Homewood Suites. And I mean, they're not bad if you are a corporate traveler who's doing a two-week project somewhere and you just sort of want to be in near the corporate office park you're doing the work in. But they're usually not in a residential neighborhood, nor do they feel homey in any way. Feel like so banal, so just generic. And so Airbnb and its hosts, when I joined Airbnb, the average length of stay for a guest was much longer than it was when I left Airbnb. I was like 5.5 days when I originally arrived. By the time I left, it had gotten, you know, close to the average for the hotel industry. The average for the hotel industry is about 2 days. The average for Airbnb was about 3 days. What's happened in COVID is the average has gone back up to what it used to be, but it's mainstream. So a lot of people are choosing to be a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks in one place or 3 months in one place. And I think that bodes well for our Airbnb hosts because it means, you know, having extended stay people makes life easier. We know that. And it does mean you sometimes have to charge a lower rate. And, you know, you don't want to do that during your peak season, but frankly, who knows what peak season is these days?
Right.
I mean, it's like what used to be peak season was like, you know, if you're someone who just really had great opportunity to take advantage of family travel during Christmas time, like I bet you didn't have a very good Christmas season and you had to figure out how to actually fill rooms when you used to have families coming to visit and stay at an Airbnb or at a VRBO nearby where the family lived. So at the end of the day, that will change and we will be a little bit more mobile again. But there's no doubt that the idea of digital nomads is here to stay.
You are, I'm sure, chatting with a lot of people who have access to accurate data and you're seeing trends in different areas. Do you think travel as we knew it is going to come back, or do you think it's going to have a permanent change and it'll be great, it'll just be different?
Well, here are the parts of the hospitality business that I think are going to really struggle for a long time. Conventions, you know, major conventions, because the convention industry is learning how to hybrid conventions. So conventions will come back, but they'll be, you know, you'll have a choice of being able to have a very immersive experience from home. Mm-hmm. So that's not good for Las Vegas and Orlando and Chicago and a lot of cities that are like, that live and breathe, you know, convention business. Corporate travel, I think it's going to take a long time to recover because, you know, corporate companies are going to say, hey, we don't need to send people on the road. Let's save some money. And I think it'll take a little bit longer. The cruise industry, you know, that doesn't matter to, you know, short-term rental hosts, but that one's going to take a long time. But what's going to actually get better? You know, I think leisure travel with family there's going to be a pent-up demand for leisure travel. There's going to be a pent-up demand for gathering with small groups of people, you know, wedding, like the wedding that got put off. It's supposed to be 150 people. Well, now it's going to be 50 people, but it's still going to happen. It's going to happen a year and a half later that was supposed to. And that'll still happen. Also, this digital nomad trend, people, you know, if we have a lot more digital nomads, they're not staying in a home. In fact, your listing, your home is not their home away from home. It's the home instead of home because they got rid, just like Michael and Debbie, they got rid of their home. Yeah. They got rid of their apartment and they're living on the road. That's a huge market that is tiny today, will be 10 times that size 5 to 10 years from now. And that is great for the short-term rental business. So I would say, you know, short-term rentals are well-positioned. Where I think short-term rentals will have a problem is if you're in an urban market that really benefited, you as a host benefited from what I call accord demand and supply. Like you're in a market where there is a convention or an event that happens every year and it fills the city and the closest hotel rooms are 50 miles away. Mm-hmm. You're a host, you do well during those times, whether it's a football game, whether it's a, because you guys are in, are you in Columbus?
Where yeah, we are. We're a huge accordion for the Ohio State and the Arnold Classic. We have those
yes,
events.
Exactly.
Here.
No, so you have an accordion problem right now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that event kind of stuff is going to be a problem. So that's going to take a while. The good news is I actually think if I were to say college sports for outdoor games, for your Buckeye games that, you know, are going to have 100,000 people at it, that's going to come back faster than conventions.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know what, there's such a sense of heritage in that. There's not heritage going to, you know, some electronics convention in Las Vegas, but there is heritage to going to a homecoming game in Columbus.
Right. That's true. All right, Chip. We don't want to take too much more of your time, but what's just one thing that you can give to our listeners, take away today, that like anybody can do, or just something that you've learned from all the hotels, like what's something like, is this just the right place for all of us to be? Like what's something that's changed your life about kind of just being in this industry overall?
I'm going to give a very practical suggestion because okay. I mean, I could tell you wonderful stories of what people have done for me that like, great. We sort of talked about unrecognized needs and that's where the fun stuff is. Here's my practical suggestion. In your listing, wherever you're listing it, you know, whatever means you're advertising yourself, I'll talk about Airbnb. In your advertising on Airbnb, your listing, be brutally candid about the three things that are spectacular about your listing and the two things that some people don't like. Now, that may sound counterintuitive. Why would anybody ever want to say, here's a couple things some people don't like? If your listing is such that nobody ever says that, then you don't have to. But if there's a couple quirky things, like you're on the third floor above a bustling breakfast restaurant that, you know, outdoors, there's a lot of people. And on Saturday and Sundays, you know, starting around 8 o'clock, there's some noise downstairs.
Right.
I don't know if people know that. If you're in a 4-story building and it's a walk up and there's no elevator, let people know.
Yeah.
So why is this? Number one is the more candid you are, the more authentic you are, the more trust you're building.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. And trust building is the number one way to accelerate people to actually book with you. Because if they trust you, they feel they it takes away some of that worry about whether this is the right place.
Right.
Number two is the right kind of guest. If you have a 4th-story walk up and there's a 72-year-old older man who's going to be carrying his bags up, by the time he sees you on that 4th floor, he's cranky because you didn't tell him that there was a walk up. And he is now feeling a little bit winded by the and winded physically and then saddened because he feels like he might have made the wrong choice.
Mm.
So get the right kind of guest. And then I would just say one of the things that gets better over time is disappointment equals expectations minus reality. So just that's an equation. Disappointment equals expectations minus reality. I wrote a book called Emotional Equations with 18 equations in it. This is one of them. Disappointment equals expectations minus reality. Managing expectations is essential. You want to market yourself and say all the good stuff. But actually, if you don't help people to understand the reality of what they're going to get, you may end up with a disappointed guest, which means less marketing for you.
There we go. From the author's mouth of
yes.
the book. We'll make sure to, in our show notes, listeners, put the books that Chip has authored and link those in our show notes today. So where can our listeners follow you, book a stay at Modern Elder Academy? How do they follow along on this next chapter for you?
You can go to modernelderacademy.com and look for us there. You'll also see on there's a daily blog called Wisdom Well. And I wrote a daily blog. And if you sign up for that, it's free. You get a morning email from me with some wisdom. As well as some occasional hospitality tips. That's one way. LinkedIn is the primary social media that I use. But I use most of everything. I post a lot of blog posts and articles there. Yeah. And you can find me at chipconley.com as well.
Great. We join your newsletter and I feel like you then become our mentor, which would be awesome too.
Yep.
So very cool.
Well, listeners, yeah. We hope that you... You're just as thankful as we are for Chip's time. So make sure, like,
go back and listen to all of the gems that he gave us, because there's multiple throughout the episode. But Chip, we can't thank you enough for, and for the super host. We love super host status, so we got to thank you for that one, because I know
everybody loves that
badge of honor for sure. So.
Yes.
All right, listeners, I am Sarah Karakayan. I am Annette Grant, and we are Thanks for Visiting.
We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. Head on over to the show notes for this episode at thanksforvisiting.me. If you're looking to take your listing to the next level and show your guests how much you care, be sure to check out our line of thoughtful hosting products, from hosting checklists to custom mugs to toilet paper stickers. We've got you covered. And if you love our show, remember, sharing is caring. Please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Awesome reviews help us bring you awesome content. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to hanging out with you next week. Thanks for visiting.
Ever wonder what it would be like to have personalized guidance from Annette and me? Imagine achieving the same incredible results we helped Amy achieve, increasing her overall revenue by a staggering 187% by diving into her biz numbers. Or perhaps you'd love to boost your hosting business like Miranda, who added a fantastic $10,000 by refining her pet policy. Well, here's a scoop. There's only one way to get that one-on-one support from Annette, myself, our expert coaches, and our industry pros is by attending our on-demand workshop. Trust us, it's worth it. During the workshop, we'll make an offer to all of our attendees to join our membership. Once you're a part of our exclusive membership, you'll gain access to our elite community of hosts in our private Facebook group. This is where the magic truly happens. Members are engaging in discussions about their business numbers, occupancy rates, how to handle guest challenges, and providing unwavering support to one another. Plus, we will have live coaching calls to help you dive deeper into portfolio growth, team building, marketing, and so much more. Don't wait any longer. Head on over to www.hostmasterclass.com right now to secure your spot and embark on this exciting journey with us. That's www.hostmasterclass.com. Trust us, you won't regret it.